that we also provide some services out of, and we also have another one in Lompoc. But those are more like affiliate offices, and so there'll be some sort of presence there by the workforce system. But our two main one stops are, again, Santa Barbara and Santa Maria. The workforce system is a partnership of a number of agencies, DOR, EDD, the community colleges, and others. And we're obviously a partner in the AEBG activities too. And so this is now our start of our real partnership, because now we have our operator in place. Up until, you know, we were kind of in the running blocks, I guess would be one way to put it, for 1 year. I didn't know it was going to take quite that long, but we started our journey of trying to find our operator about a year ago. And as I said, KRA has just been on board for 1 week. You know, we've gotten all the contracts done, and so I've been introducing them to folks. And Maxine has another meeting. I know she's going to be leaving probably early to go to that up north, but I wanted her to come by here to say hello to this group, because you're a very important group. And this is a place for her to make the connections that she needs to make and the partnerships that she needs to develop. Now, again, Maxine will explain this. She is the regional manager for KRA. The actual program manager here in Santa Barbara County is Gabe Morales, who some of you may know as having been the director of CET in Santa Maria. So I'm going to stop talking, uncharacteristically of me. I'm going to stop talking.
And everything he said.
And I'm seeing I'm saying a few things, whatever
perfect.
She'd like to say.
Do you want me to walk to the... Please. Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
Perfect. Well, good morning, everyone, as I make my way over here. As Ray had mentioned, my name is Maxine Suka. I am officially the Director of Workforce Operations for KRA Corporation. KRA Corporation is a for-profit organization that has a very large footprint on the East Coast and have expanded operations out to the West. They've been doing this type of work for over 35 years, focusing primarily on adult and dislocated worker programs, in addition to youth and TANF operations. So that's known as your welfare to work grant-funded programs. And so as Ray had mentioned, I'll be working very closely with Gabriel Morales, who is the program manager for our Santa Barbara and Santa Maria one-stop centers. KRA, a lot of people have been wondering, what does KRA stand for? ironically, it is the initials of the president of the organization, Milton R. Atterbury, but at the same time, it's our core values of what we truly believe in terms of exceptional service providing to customers. So K is the knowledge, our foundational stepping stool to making sure that we continue to provide innovative solutions to our customers. R is responsibility, the responsibility in which we stand to make sure that we continue to provide exceptional solutions to our customers, whether they are job seekers or employers, anyone who really we interact with on a daily basis. And then achievement is A, and that pretty much stands for us providing our continual performance and trusted results to all of the partners involved. And so we're really excited to be here. Like Ray mentioned, you know, we have been here in town for the past week. Now is our second week officially, but we've been really prepping and gearing up, meeting a lot of partners in Santa Barbara, also in Santa Maria, and we're really just excited to be here. I think one of the last things that I would leave everyone with also is we have an extensive amount of work that we've been doing in San Diego. So my home office is in San Diego. Literally drove up here this morning. So I'm all hyped on coffee right now. So we operate adult and dislocated worker projects in the San Diego region, working very closely with the San Diego Workforce Partnership. You know, we have very close knit relations with a lot of the adult education providers and community colleges in the area, and that's the type of relationship that we would like to continue to build up here and enhance some of those relationships that have been forged with a lot of the local partners that are in the area. So in addition to all of that, I'm also the I sit on the board for the National Association for Workforce Development Professionals. And so we work very closely with Ray and his board with the California Workforce Association. So California is a part of my region. So if there's anything that we can do to extend out and advocate for the voice of the workers, please don't hesitate to contact myself or Ray.
So So Martine, I have a quick question for you. For those of us that don't know in this room, can you sort of boil down to the top three services that a one-stop provides a community?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. So the top three would be mainly one focused on job seekers, so whether that is through funded training programs. So we can provide funded training for adult workers, so anyone over the ages of 18 and older will be able to provide that service too. We also will be able to help existing employers, so small businesses or larger corporations that are in the area with on-the-job training opportunities, and those are also funded programs through our small jewel of one-stop centers that we operate. And lastly, the recruitment, rapid response, anything that labor market information that kind of shifts and changes along with the trends in the economy, we want to be able to provide that to the public. So it's all free access to the public, and you know, we like to consider ourselves the hidden jewel. We used to say that in San Diego, we're saying that now here, because a lot of people don't necessarily understand and know that you don't need to pay $300 for someone to review your resume. You have certified professional resume writers that are on staff that can do that for free. That's the type of work that we do in One Stop Centers. That and a laundry list of other things,
yes.
But that's
yes.
The top three.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I would just point out, again, we do all of these things, but we have a very limited budget, too. I just want to be very clear about that.
Thank you. Okay, so we're moving along the agenda. Ray, you're up next to describe the WIO regional plan. I just ask that you be mindful of our time limits.
Well, no, actually, I'm going to be very brief about this, just sort of a heads up for everyone. Much of what's going on in the education system, as well as in the workforce system, and probably some of the other areas too, I'm thinking DOR and EDD, there's a lot of changes going on. These changes have started over a year ago. And the way that these changes are being brought about are through a number of plans. So everybody's doing plans. I was with Melissa the other day, and there's a regional community college plan that's being developed. And I know that Julie has certain plans that she has to do with Department of Rehabilitation. Certainly the workforce system has two plans. Our local workforce board that I lead and coordinate has to do a local plan. And that's for Santa Barbara County, and it speaks to what our objectives are and how we plan about bringing those objectives forward and some of the partnerships that we're building, et cetera, et cetera. Well, life has gotten more complicated over the past year in that there's something called a regional plan now. And that's what I'm here to speak with you about, the regional plan. And this is a draft. It's still a rough draft, so I can't really hand it out to anybody. But this is the regional plan that's going to be online, and I will send an email to Corlay so that she can send it to everyone who has signed in here today, so that you can review the regional plan and provide some comments. Now, you say, okay, region, so what's the region, Ray? Well, the region is Santa Barbara County, San Luis County, Monterey County, and Santa Cruz County. Now, those of us who've been around Santa Barbara for a long time are probably scratching our heads and saying, Ray, you didn't mention Ventura. I didn't mention Ventura. Ventura is not in our region for some reason. So I didn't necessarily make up these regions, so don't blame me for that. But Ventura, for a number of reasons, Ventura is a standalone region unto itself. That means that they have some additional responsibilities that the rest of us can share. But at any rate, this is a regional plan, and it speaks to some regional objectives that we will be attempting to bring forward in the workforce system. There are implications for the AEBG program, as well as community colleges in our regional plan. So again, my message this morning is please read the regional plan when it gets put online and provide comments. The regional plan actually, I believe, has to be submitted to the state in March, but there's some back and forth about some modifications to it, and I think it actually goes into effect like July 1 of this year. We are very fortunate in that our regional plan is being written by the former workforce director in San Luis County, Reva Bear. Some of you may know Reva. Reva is no longer the director there. She is doing consulting work, and we are very fortunate to have her doing that. But again, regionalism is here, folks. So whether you, I know it is in the community college system as well as in the workforce system. So I just wanted to point out that this is going to be made available. I do encourage everyone to read it once I send the message to Coralie that the regional plan is now posted online, and there'll be a mechanism for you to respond online to any comments that you have. And I don't know, maybe AEBG may even want to do some official comments themselves, and so that would be Coralie and Melissa may want to coordinate that with us on the board. So
sounds good. So what is the status of the local plan?
The local plan is also being developed concurrently. Linda Hillman, who is the deputy director for workforce, who reports to me, is actually pulling that together. She's going to be reporting out on the local plan at the January 27th meeting of the Workforce Board, which is going to be at Hancock College in Santa Maria. We alternate between North County and South County, our meetings. And so it's a North County meeting. It just happened to work out that way. And so she'll be reporting out on that. She has been coordinating her work with the regional plan, which is what's required. And she, one of the things about these plans this first year, and I guess it's a good news, bad news sort of thing, is that there's a lot of fill in the blanks sort of thing. So it doesn't allow for too much creativity, but at the same time, it does make it manageable for somebody to pull the plan together. So Linda has been working on that, and again, it asks for things like identifying your major sectors, identifying your goals as a workforce board, that sort of stuff, and a lot of that is driven by state initiatives and state vision as well as early vision that we've had. So again, this first time around, and the plan has to be done every couple of years, so I think it's the next go around where there's going to be a lot of real creativity because people will have had time under their belt under the new Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act, which is what we're operating under now and what's calling for these plans, as opposed to the Workforce Investment Act, WIA, which had been in effect for the past 17 years. Yes, you have another question?
Yeah, well, I just want, like I mentioned to you earlier, we're required to align our WIOA literacy application with your plan, so we'll be in touch, thank you.
Yeah, so Coralie should, in fact, if you need to have Linda's direct information, I can get that to you.
Okay.
So you two should start that conversation.
Great. Okay. Thank you,
that
Ray.
Was kind of brief.
Kind of. okay, and next is a update from our AEBG coordinator, Coralie, year-to-date expenditure and progress reports.
Okay. So it's really important. It's really easy to actually get lost in all of the different deliverables, the timelines, because there's so many different due dates. And I think we wanted to make sure that everyone was clear in the consortium that we do have our two different grants, and there's quite a bit of reporting, which is why the consortium set up the mechanism to do quarterly reports as well as presentations to make sure that we're all on track, but also so that I can report to the state our expenditures and progress of our programs. So for our first year, the 2015-2016 grant cycle, that report is due at the end of January. And so all of these reports are internal, which I'll be taking care of. And so you don't have to worry. but it's good for everyone to know the timelines. So the 2015-2016 grant cycle, it's coming to a close. Now, the big question is, well, when is the absolute last day we can use our funds? And That is December 2017 of this year. That's my final reporting period. So then that leaves us to year two, the grant cycle 2016-17. Final reporting is December 2018. So you see, although it seems like there is a little bit of time, as you know, we received our funds a little bit later. So that means that we have to expedite expanding those funds. So.
Did you say when I
am? Oh, sure.
2018 or 2017?
The 2018. And so part of that reporting also ties into our data and accountability report. Now that initiative by the state is, we want to envision that like a school's registrar to analyze, to collect all of the student data to ensure that it's consistent across the board, which is why Chair Moreno had wanted, at least is emphasizing, to collect student data from all of our partners so that we can track who's using our services. And so the data and accountability report will be due in February, and the state has given us more direction to commission certain programs as well as connect us with specific people. So now the information has been very, very helpful, and the timing is it's short turnaround time, but it can be done. So with that said, for February's consortium, our next public meeting, we will be reviewing what they have proposed and how it aligns with our existing resources. We here, our Office of Institutional Research here at SBCC will be playing a large role, or at least playing a role in the integration of this data. So they helped us with our last report, and now we're going to slowly migrate that data to this new operating system. So more updates to come.
Thank you, Carlisle. And now we have scheduled our year one program leader presentation. So we're excited to hear about the progress of the 15-16 programs. And so we're going to give each presenter 2 to 3 minutes to present on the programs that we funded. So this is a special meeting for us because we get to have face-to-face time with our program leaders and hear about all this wonderful work that's being done and that has been funded. So first up is Shelley Dixon from the Christie Institute.
I have my phone, so I can have my timer.
Oh, good.
Because otherwise I'd talk forever. Good morning, everyone. We're really grateful, the Career Skills Institute is, for the opportunity that the AABG funds have provided to the Career Skills Institute. Also helps if you get started. So what we've accomplished since our last presentation in June is we've expended and encumbered 90% of our funding. We've awarded an additional 87 badges for a total of 159 digital badges to date. Of these, 103 badges have been claimed by students. That's a 64% claim rate. And what students are doing is that they're adding these digital badges to their email, Facebook, to their LinkedIn news feed, and their LinkedIn profile. It's important to note that since we last met, Melissa has engaged with LinkedIn. We are now a partner with LinkedIn. Our digital badge, the Career Strategist badge, is now endorsed by LinkedIn. Our press releases that have gone out recently, we're able to use the LinkedIn logo. Any materials that we put out will have the LinkedIn logo on them. In summer, we offered 36 sections with a duplicate headcount of 510 students. And in fall 2016, we offered 96 sections with 960 students, duplicate headcount of 960 students. Curriculum development continued over the summer. And we have two new digital badges that have been put through this curriculum advisory committee and are now up at the state chancellor's office waiting for approval. That social media for business and harness the cloud to maximize work performance, as well as for new digital badges in business, project management, enterprise communication to emerging leaders, thrive and survive in the workplace. And then we also have two new third-party certifications that Esther Frankel, who's the department chair for the Computer Information Systems department, that she has put through, and so those are up at the chancellor's office waiting to get approved, and we're hoping to offer those in fall 2016. In October, we hired Synod, a consulting firm, to provide leads to business partners, and as a result of that, we now have new industry partners of Yardi, Santa Barbara Neighborhood Clinics, Our Lady of Sorrows Church, Right Scale, Weave, Marvia, and we'll soon be meeting with MTD, and then I just got an email about Citrix. So, gosh, that is like just awesome. And so our client base is growing significantly, and for the first time since the CSI's inception in fall of 2015, we will have full classes prior to the start of the spring semester, which starts on Tuesday. Next Tuesday. And so anyway, that's it. And I just want to thank you so much. It's been a great effort and fun. And, you know, it's driven by Melissa. Anything that's driven by Melissa is wonderful. So, thank you so much.
Our next program is presented by Alan Price on the Nonprofit Construction Technology Program, my colleague in crime.
I will be very short. I'll just highlight the next speaker, Dr. Foster, is the course from the backbone, and our projects are really in sync, so when he speaks, he'll be giving further details. But we've been tasked to, and supported by the grant, which we're very thankful for, to develop bridge courses in our non-credit program that will allow students to take, and of course with the goal of bridging over into our credit programs at some point. We proposed originally to develop 10 to 14 non-credit classes in the areas of environment, horticulture, primarily construction technology, culinary being the biggest ones. And I'm happy to report that we have developed 20 classes. The courses have been state approved or in the process of being state approved. And to date, out of the 20, four have been approved, and we've been offering them to current total 271 duplicated headcount students. These are primarily in the construction trades. So we have, met what we have asked and what we proposed. And again, I want to say thank you to this group for the opportunity, because what we're doing is it's really important, and that is the first step of providing an opportunity for training, skills training. And to do that, we had to have the potential and the support to create those courses. So with that said, I would just like to pass it off to Patrick, who will take this discussion further, because most of the courses that have been developed have come from the construction trades. And then on top of that, his use of those courses in supporting our new apprenticeship program is very exciting. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Price. Patrick Foster to present on the pre-apprenticeship construction technology. Good morning.
Thank you, Maureen. So the construction technology program actually had three projects for this semester. One was the non-credit short-term vocational classes, Spanish assisted, that Alan was referring to. And we created eight of those, and four of them going for three semesters. They've been very successful. The completion rates are good, the enrollment's good, and the feedback's been really great. They're to transition Spanish-speaking students in the community, workers in the community that aren't sure if they have enough English to go into our regular credit program. So we have them go to these short-term vocational, they either take all four with a certificate or they can take any one they want. And most of them realize they know enough English to do this, so the class is given in English and Spanish. And then they're feeding, now beginning to feed into the regular credit program. So that's been really successful. They're really excited, an excited bunch of students. It was a, Jose tipped me off that it was a part of the Hispanic community that we weren't reaching out to. I work a lot with Jose, and he tells me, hey, you know, here's some people that we're not reaching, you might direct them. So we've been working together on that for a number of years. So we've got those four going, four are being approved. They're up in Sacramento with the chancellor's office. God knows how long that'll take, but we're hoping by fall we can start the second set. We did another set of 10 regular 16-week classes in the electrical training program that's under my program. And we had to convert those to non-credit classes. They were credits because the city colleges will not allow repeatability, and they have to repeat. They have to take these classes to work in the industry, and if they've taken the ones before, they can't repeat. So we took the whole program and we're making it non-credit, so it's free and they can repeat. So that's really been a service to the local electrician. And then the kind of the STAR program in the book, the pre-apprenticeship that Alan referenced. And that's just a pilot program that we're trying to bring the local employers and the students together in a better way so that they, when they graduate from the academy, they just don't go out looking for jobs and kind of hit and miss with employers and drop work, which is what everybody does in construction. And it's not a very satisfying connection. So we get the employers that have beginning employees to come to our program and contract with us. We train them, the employer trains them. Hopefully they'll go into work with that employer after our school, and there'll be a seamless continuity of their work, and they'll have hopefully lifelong or at least long-range work as a result of this. That's been very successful. We've had five students go through this first round, and we're going to go through the next grant. And the feedback's been really great from the employers and the students. A lot of them are on financial aid, so one of the inducements was that we pay their tuition, so that is no longer an inducement. So I thought, oh great, there was the program. But the feedback was that they're taking the program more seriously. They're taking their work more seriously, the students. They're taking the school more seriously. They're kind of proud to be in this. And the employers have stated they've noticed difference in the demeanor of their employees. So there's a lot of things that are happening that we didn't even plan that are really positive. So far it looks like a great program. We're going to continue it this semester and then next year, and we'll evaluate at the end of that and see how it's going.
So just a thought that this, a pilot could serve other CTE areas.
Yeah, if it's successful, we'll want to market it and get it out, and document it and get it out so other people can check it out.
Yeah, and I love hearing the unanticipated benefits of a program that we're doing that would really sync well with a practice of promise that we need to submit. So I'm going to sort of informally nominate this as a practice of promise that we submit with the AEBG at the state, because I just think that's terrific.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you.
And before I go, I want to thank Corley for her work. It's been really good. I want to thank Clarissa Morris, who's a director on the pre-apprenticeship program. She's been working really hard and going. And then I want to thank you, Melissa, and Alan for guidance over this last year.
He's a Capricorn too.
He's a Capricorn. Okay, and our next presenter is Sylvia Morgan with Adult High School GED and our ESL program. Welcome, Sylvia.
Good morning. So I'm the new coordinator for the ESL Adult High School and GED programs for non-credit Santa Barbara City College. And I started in August. When I took on this position, there was already a long list of things that I was supposed to accomplish with the AEBG funding. And Corley has helped me so much in trying to narrow it down to what we could do within the timeline, and then to give us the extension to continue utilizing the funds until the end of this year. that's going to be necessary, because you start something, you gather momentum, and then you want to finish it. So what we have accomplished in this first phase of the AEG grant was we developed new curriculum that is also always ongoing. When you're in an educational institution, you have to continually develop new curriculum because there are new needs for our students. For example, our new curriculum includes a number of workforce components, technology, which we couldn't take to our students before because we teach a number of classes off-sites. So in off-sites, they don't get use of a lab. So what we have done now, combining this first phase of AEBG with the second phase, we're purchasing Chromebooks. So the Chromebooks will go to the classes. But you have to back that up, and the teacher's ability to utilize the Chromebooks and teach with technology. So AEBG also provides another underlying portion, which is professional development. And there's a huge professional development team developing ongoing training so that teachers can be you know, within the skills that are required to use this technology. So I'm very, very grateful to receiving this type of funding. Within the year, because I have two departments, in one department I have received $150,000 and we have 55 remaining, but everything is allocated with your help, Raleigh. And then in adult high school GD, we have received $120,000 and we have 45 remaining. And thankful to have the time to spend that. What we are going to focus on is developing vocational curriculum and hopefully online courses. Maybe you're not familiar, but also in an organization that has standards that you must follow, in order to develop an online curriculum, we have to work with other departments, get again training for faculty, so it might take us a whole year to even develop that. So thank you so much, and I look forward to continuing the collaboration.
But I'm going to do this one from here.
Okay.
Because I bet you, I'm not even going to take up 2 minutes.
Okay.
because again, that timing me now. But anyway, this is a obviously a research project that we were responsible for overseeing that was for adults with disabilities. And one of the things that I really love about this group, meaning AEBG, as well as the workforce system, is that what we're trying to do is to make data-driven decisions. And so very early on, we decided what we wanted to do was to understand a little bit more about the challenges and the opportunities and the needs of adults with disabilities so that we could make sure that the AEBG system was serving them properly. And so that was why we were funded to lead the research project that we actually had a researcher who's done a number of research projects for the workforce system, again, because this is related to workforce. BW Research actually did the research for us. And so that project has actually been completed. So that's the reason I said I could do it in 2 minutes. So, so we've actually, and there was a work group involved, and there was lots of feedback and a lot of give and take, and maybe there's a little bit of stress that happened occasionally, but I think that from all of that, we had a very good product that came out and informed us and something that we could use in making decisions, in which we actually did, which was leading to our second round of funding. We used the information and the research that we had gotten to help us in our decision making in funding the second round. So again, the contractor has been paid off. the final document is available, and I don't know whether Corlay's going to put it on the website or not, but it's there to help guide us and move forward. And so I feel very, very thankful and grateful to everybody who participated in the process, as well as the AEBG consortium for funding it. I think that it helps move us forward as a system and as a community in serving a number of people who maybe weren't getting served before.
That's the major takeaway, is that it informed our decision to move forward with a program for adults with disabilities. Yeah.
2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Thank you, Ray.
Okay, thanks, Toby.
It's a little hot in here.
Oh, yes.
Are we able to turn
it heat? It turns on and off, yeah. And at the wrong time.
He has to take off.
I need a room.
Like my building. If you ever come to visit me, I'm over in that new environmentally sound building, the one that has all the green stuff on the outside where SB CAG is and everything like that. You can never get the temperatures right in that building. Never. You know, you're either cold or you're hot.
So our next agenda item is to hear from program leaders that are requesting addendums or changes. Potential changes to their programs, and Sylvia is up next.
Are these voting items or not?
Well, we, you know, these are just.
I combined my statement, so I've already presented my request for extension.
Okay, so some of these will potentially lead to an action item. If we have to approve a reallocation of expenditures that weren't spent. So, Corley, can you inform of the status of Sylvia's budget and whether or not you're recommending we take action on that? Is there a change,
exactly,
or is it just an extension?
Exactly. It's just an extension. So this portion, the addendums to the programs, this is in the event, this is to inform the consortium that the remaining funds that we needed to know what's become of them, or what are our plans for them, and I need to inform the state, well, why do we have 40% or 30% that hasn't been expended. And so it's really this is more so to apprise you, but also one effort the consortium really wanted was if we deviate from the activity chart or the request for proposal, to bring it forth to the consortium.
Okay.
So with Sylvia's programs, it's just a matter of needing more time to reallocate funds and potentially recraft the activity chart that Lisa Forrest Gardner proposed. So
technically speaking, we do not need to take action on an extension, because the grant always allowed for expenditures of 15-16 through the end of 2017. So technically we don't need to take action on that, but if there is a major budget shift or activity shift, we expect to be apprised of that and to take action on that. And so are you saying at this moment in time we do not have a request from ESL or Adult High School continuing on with the existing approved activity chart and programs?
Yes.
Okay.
That is correct.
That takes care of that.
I have a question.
Yes.
I heard that you were developing like online courses. Is that a shift from the original proposal?
No.
Okay.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And if I may, this one portion is that we're working with for both programs is this the hiring of staff for and working with Pat English and the human resources, the City College, to ensure that those are just the only two little roadblocks to make sure that we hire efficiently and that payment gets through to any consultants, or payment gets through to any hires. So once that stumbling block is clarified, then she can move forward, because those were the only two major parts of the budget that hadn't been expended.
Okay.
And the reason I was asking about the online courses is I know you have $45,000 left, is the idea to develop the courses or look at what other places have done, that the courses have already been developed, does not necessarily have to be revamped or rebuilt from the ground up.
That's a good question. So there's a couple of things here. Online non-credit course development is sort of presents its own challenge because it's a little bit of uncharted territory because of our the way we record attendance and get apportionment is we count hours of students in seats.
Yeah.
And so when you move to an online platform in non-credit, that becomes, we have to overcome that challenge. And so we're sort of leading edge on the development of online non-credit courses. Mm-hmm. So we're exploring what we can do and what we can't do and how we do it. And to look to other models is always a great option, and so I'm not sure in this particular program what other models we have to look to, but certainly we don't want to reinvent the wheel. But in any event, no matter what we decide, if we pull from another model, we have to go through our own system. It doesn't really save us any process time, but certainly we can look at other community college models for.
Can I address just to her angle that when we submitted the request, we submitted the request for development of curriculum. So that could encompass any type of curriculum. It doesn't change our direction simply because it's online.
Thank you. And then a next potential addendum to a program is RAISE. Your program for adults and intergenerational research
project. Two here. Yeah. And not sure exactly, you know, one reason I asked whether or not we were making decisions, I wasn't really sure exactly how it was going to play out, but that helped. But your responses helped inform what I can say now. Okay.
Yeah, well, and then I think we have a discussion, and if we have an action item on the agenda in case our discussion informs that we need to take action.
Okay, so these are listed as action items.
Well, not quite. We have agenda item number 9 allows us to move something from this section to there for action.
Oh, okay.
Sort of creative.
That is clever. I have to remember that. My meetings. Good. So anyway, so let me start. I am going to be talking about two additional projects that were funded in that first round. And I kind of alluded to it when I introduced Maxine earlier, is that we were thinking in the first round that we wanted to do a couple of things that the workforce system could provide a connectivity with the AEBG system and that would do the community some good. One had to do with an intergenerational project where we were hoping to have older workers, I don't want to call them seniors, older workers work in the schools, passing on some of their knowledge and actually working with some young people also. So that was one idea that we had, and that was going to be something that was going to be done by our operator. Again, keeping in mind that we just now have our operator on board, and that's the one of the main things that you should realize as we're talking going forward about these two projects, is that we now just have the operator on board. The second project had to do with helping, again, older workers, older adults receive workforce services in the one-stop system. And so it was sort of asking for a navigator, somebody to work specifically with them. They have a lot more challenges in moving forward and getting new jobs. One of the election, and I'm going to kind of go global here. One of the reasons for the recent presidential election was that there seemed to be a lot of people who were being overlooked who had lost jobs that were paying well, and then they weren't able to get back and get those jobs that were paying that sort of salary. And so this was one way of kind of working at that, connecting to the education system also, knowing that those folks would mostly need some sort of retraining. And so by connecting to the one-stops, as Maxine said, where we do have training opportunities and know what occupations are growing, what areas and sectors are growing, we were thinking that that would be the way to go forward. And so that's the connection. That's the reason why we were doing those two projects. So I wanted to kind of say that up front. So as has been made apparent now, is that we now have an operating room door, okay? And this is where the change and the modification may come in, and that's why I was trying to get straight, because I have to lean, obviously, toward Melissa and Coralie for their expertise on the AEBG program and funding and how this plays out. So the original proposal said that the Workforce Development Board was going to be doing those things that I just talked about.
Yeah.
So now we have our operator in place who's actually going to take on doing those activities for us. It's still the Workforce Development System, it's still the Workforce Development Board overseeing it, but the actual operator is KRA Corporation, who was just here. So the question, one modification would be, I don't want the contract or the funding to come to the county. I'm saying this with the county HR director in the room. I really can't believe I'm doing this. But I don't want the funding to come to the county because the county will take an administrative fee. It's as simple as that. I don't want to have that money siphoned off. I want it to go directly to where we intended it to go, which is in services to those populations, okay, that we're talking about. And I also feel that, so my recommendation would be that we would actually have AEBG do the funding directly to KRA.
Okay.
So that's where the decision point comes in. If you still think that these items are important,
yeah.
Then the way to proceed would be to do it with directly with KRA.
So, Coralie, how much are we talking about dollar-wise for both projects?
Each project was $15,000. The consortium offered $15,000 for intergenerational, also program for adults, and the residual also from the adults with disabilities, which is another $15,000.
So we have a total of 45.
Do we have 45 available now?
Well, for the projects that were all allocated, mm-hmm. but they're all designated for specific programs.
But the two that I'm talking about, isn't that just $30,000?
Yes, total, just 30,000, just the two.
But there's 15 that was unspent on the adults with disabilities?
Yes.
So we allocated 30,000 for the adults with disability research?
45. We allocated 60, and we gave 45 to the consultant for BW research.
There's savings.
Yes.
Well, there's a savings.
So I'm just looking at a bucket of money that we could mm-hmm. potentially redirect to the one stop. Would you object to including that, what's left over in the adults with disabilities research project?
No, I wouldn't object to that at all.
So I just want to have the discussion
sure,
to see if we
I
need it. I think we mm-hmm. need an action item here because, and I think that we might want to even go down to a program level conversation
mm-hmm.
because one of the intentions I think of the consortium was to do some research, the intergenerational research, or what we were. I think anticipating back from that allocation was, what are the gaps in the older adult programs? And again, that data-driven decision-making
mm-hmm.
Tenet that we hold so dear to inform us whether we should move forward with an older adult program that helps K-12 children succeed. And so how important or relevant does that continue to be to the consortium to discover, is there a gap there?
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to move forward with that research project, is the one stop the right person to put that in, or is it maybe we engage BW Research again for that piece? So I think that's a conversation, and maybe that's 15,000, and then the 30,000 I think for the other items. You know, I love the idea that we help to fund a one stop, as long as we have an understanding with the one stop that we're receiving data back and reports back that are serving the AEBG plan.
That's right. And one of the things that does happen at the one stop is that they do collect the data. Okay, and what you're speaking to, Melissa, is something that I was going to say anyway, which is that if we decide to, again, move forward with modification, having the KRA as the operator, that what we need to do is to go back to the deliverables and make sure that we have the right deliverables in there. And so that's a bit of a modification also. So there's a modification as to who would be contracting, and the second part of the modification is to revisiting the deliverables that we had there.
Totally agree. And so, okay.
I'd like
Johnny?
To see it in writing somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, how that flow chart would work for you. So it's easier to follow. Because
mm-hmm.
One of my concerns would be is, you know, KRA has a contract, and are we paying money for deliverables that are already supposed to be doing it? So, you know, flow chart,
gotcha.
It would help to clarify
mm-hmm.
if this is a duplication of funding for mm-hmm. a project, or is this additional?
I can tell you at the, off the top of my head, it's not a duplication, because I know what I'm funding them to do.
Right,
but
a flow chart
okay.
would help.
But the flow chart would help, and I agree.
We're not,
I think that
we're
is,
not as intimately, you know,
I think that is important
anymore.
That we do that.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
What percentage does the county, what percentage would the county take in comparison to how much percentage would they take for their own employees?
Well, first of all, I know that there's a limitation on a percentage. It can't be more than 5%, and I think the WDB takes 15%, or the county takes more than that, right?
Yeah.
We can't, and I think we skim the 5% off the top
mm-hmm.
as the fiscal agent, and so there is no administrative allocation left
mm-hmm.
for any individual program lead.
But when the county agreed to take this money, they agreed to that 5%, right?
Well,
because otherwise, why would they take the money if they were going to not agree to what we were putting as a limit?
Well, actually, there's a chicken and an egg situation that occurred. Is that we actually put in for the funding, and what happened is that after it was approved, the county was also doing a indirect cost rate, an ICR, and the ICR came in after the proposal had been funded. The ICR is now higher than what we could take, and that's why I said I don't want it to go to the county.
But doesn't the county have to live up to their original agreement? You can't just change midway, can you?
Well, but it, well.
Yeah, you're right. It would cause me to have to go back and negotiate some things.
Because
with,
basically what
mm-hmm.
we're being asked is to take the money that was originally allocated to one
mm-hmm.
organization
mm-hmm.
and bypass the process of reallocating the fund to someone that you were saying to give it to,
mm-hmm.
would not actually open up the process that it should be.
It's not being transparent.
Yes. That's my concern. We're sending it to a for-profit organization when we originally gave it to a government entity.
Mm-hmm. But
that as a process is, I mean, and I'm just going to use an example.
Sure.
Patrick can come and say, well, can you give my money to this organization now? And that's my concern. This is an organization that just showed up on our doorstep a week ago.
Well, yeah. Okay, so let me respond. And what I'm saying and what would continue to be in the contract is that the oversight of this project is still done by the Workforce Board and myself. And we're doing that without any payment. And that's what we're doing, okay? The contractor is our way of implementing our operations. Previously, it had been done in-house, and because of law changes, it's no longer being done in-house. The real intent of the program of connecting the workforce system and the one-stop operations and doing these particular activities is still going to happen, just as originally conceived and planned. It's just that what I'm saying is that now that we have an operator on board, I don't want to be the middleman in regards to the contracting process, the funding, because there's so little funding available.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but the question that I have is, when these funds were allocated, can the grantee say who to give the money to?
So this is why Ray's bringing it forward.
Yeah.
So, and this is new territory for us. So the way I see it is, you know, Ray, who was the original recipient on behalf of the county, is now, we could determine is now effectively putting it back in
That's
the
right.
pot, and then the consortium gets to decide how it gets
exactly.
reallocated. Mm-hmm. And it's Ray's recommendation that it be reallocated to KRA. Mm-hmm. So what I'm going to put on the table is that we receive back, the consortium make a decision to receive back the funds that have not been spent under the 15-16 umbrella, and we take it upon ourselves to reallocate that, and potentially we need to put out another RFA, and we invite KRA to submit with the Workforce Development Board. And so we would have to determine, you know, what I think that since we decided on these particular topics, like we've already worked that out, that those particular projects have value to the consortium, we could either decide to keep it consistent with what we've already decided a program topic allocation is.
Right.
And then invite someone to meet that existing program topic, and it goes to whomever else wants to compete with
exactly.
I think that's a very clean process.
Okay.
And so let's move that to an action item.
Okay.
To item number 9, and let's see. So we'll move that down. And we'll have a motion later.
Motion, and I agree.
So we'll go back and address that. Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, that's good.
My item is we have unspent student support services allocations, and for a complexity of reasons. One, so just to remind you and correct me if I say something that's not factual, but 15-16 was allocated, we allocated $75,000 to Student Support Services Program. About $5,000, $4,900 and some change, was spent on an approved program. And the remainder of that, so about $70,000, has not been allocated, and part of the reason is our student support services dean and the leads over there haven't had the bandwidth to implement what we had agreed to implement. And so it is my understanding that we're going to continue to implement it, and if I remember just sort of broadly, we needed to hire hourly workers for projects to in the non-credit area. We need to update our student support service filing system to stay aligned with what we're doing on campus, and that is to scan and make our records online to stay current with the technology. So that was one. And then there was other pieces of that to refurbish the non-credit offices to be up to speed with technology and all of that, because, you know, sort of, it's been a challenge, I would say, for non-credit student support services to be at the level that we provide on the credit side. It just hasn't gotten there. And that the effort with this funding was to bring us to the quality of service and the quality of technology to match the credit side for our non-credit students. So I believe that we are going to continue to move forward with those projects under Coralie's direction. And there, just so you know, we're in the middle of a reorganization of leadership for non-credit. And so that is another sort of complicating factor. And we're going to have some answers pretty soon, and we want to make sure that any student support services dollars is aligned with the true need, which may change in the next 60 days or so. So I just wanted the consortium to be aware that 1516 hasn't been spent yet. We're still planning on moving forward with the plan, but it's subject to change, and so I'd like to put this on the agenda for our next month's meeting and give you an update on any decisions that have been made moving forward.
But you're not anticipating the project changing?
No, because there still is a need. So I've inquired about, there's still this need. We need to still put the records in electronically. We still need to update the office. We may relocate the student services office to a different part of Schott or Wake campus. So there's too much up in the air, I think, and that's why I'm hesitant to spend the funds yet until we meet again. And so I can report back. I can put this on the agenda and report back.
But it's not going to change deans or whomever.
Well, I can't speak to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's an unknown.
I don't know.
That's not unknown. Okay,
that's cool.
That's cool.
So,
and if that were to happen, then it would be similar to this situation that we just went through with me, possibly, right?
Could be, but I don't think the need of student support services is going to change no matter if the leadership changes. We're still going to have this student support services.
And it's still going to be with Santa Barbara City College.
Yes, of course.
That's what you're doing.
But the gap that we're filling here is that AEBG, our one-year and three-year plan is very focused on providing our non-credit students with student support services and a very high quality that we haven't had. We just haven't had that quality that we need, and that's the gap that we're filling. And so there's another allocation of $75,000 for 16-17. And the other complicating factor is that some of this non-credit student support service staff has been funded by other grant funds that have shrunk. And so in the next 30 to 45 days or so, we may want to reallocate that new round of student support services funding to support staff, which we didn't do. So there might be an addendum for 16-17 as well. So I just kind of want to, you know, take a breather to see how the chips fall and come back to the consortium for a definitive request.
Yeah, if we know within the next 30 days, it could be just two meetings away.
But I think 15-16, my guess is that it will likely just move forward with the current expenditure, and that's what's been recommended by the Dean of Student Support Services, and we just continue.
Oh. Okay.
But that will fall under Coralie's leadership as opposed to the Dean of Student Support Services, just so that we have a closer eye on making sure those hourly workers are properly supervised and get that job done.
Okay.
Okay.
I think I understand.
Well, we're not changing anything yet. All right, so I think before we move any further, we invite public and entity comment, and I don't have any slips. Is there anyone that that has requested to speak? Okay. And so let's move to the action items. So I'd like to entertain a motion.
Yeah, I'd like to make the motion myself.
Okay,
in fact.
Go ahead.
I'd like to make a motion that we receive back the unspent funds that were allocated to the Workforce Development Board, which totals $45,000, 15 from the intergenerational, 15 from the one-stop navigator, I believe it was what it was called, and the additional 15 that was saved in the research project, and that we direct staff to come up with a reallocation plan for those dollars to include, and I'm kind of looking
to
you, how do you want
to post a request for proposal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to include, okay. To post a request for a proposal for the expenditure of those dollars.
Yes.
So did that, oh, that's right, it's all on tape.
Yeah.
So it's on tape. Hopefully that's a clear motion. Should I repeat it or something? Mm-hmm. No?
Okay. Do we have a second?
A second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We have a consent item to approve the public meeting minutes of December 7th. Has everybody had an opportunity to review the minutes in your folder?
So I can't vote on that.
Do I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Abstentions?
Great.
And our next regular public meeting is February 1st, same time, but hopefully we'll be back in room week 28. And I'd like to have a motion to adjourn.
So
second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Only a half hour before the
wrong. We're scheduled to 10:30.
Okay. And remember the regional plan, folks. Regional plan. Comments. Comments.
Yeah. It gives you an attitude.
Yeah.
It's hard to work.
Could I just show you my notes from our WIOA?
Yeah. I know you want to get the sheet. Yeah. We can do that.
Okay.
Okay, see you next time. All right. The process pieces are always interesting and kind of get right, because especially when, like you say, you're on five boards and sometimes they deal with different rules. And that's why at the very beginning I wanted to know, you know, what our parameters were and what we could actually do. So it seemed like a good compromise. I like that. Yeah.
Okay, Ray.
Okay,
thank
you, Tony.
I can't remember.